Okay, good evening, everyone. How are we all? I'm glad that there are five brave souls who sat on the front row, which is always nice to see. It's never good when no one wants to be close to us. My name's Sam McCleary. I'm the editor of EG, and I'm very happy to welcome you all to EG Question Time here in this beautiful city of Glasgow. And I do have to admit that it's been a while since I've been here, not to Scotland, but to Glasgow. The last time, I think, was in 2014 when I'd run here from Edinburgh, as you do, as part of a 15-day sort of run and cycle challenge I was doing for Duke of Edinburgh. The weather wasn't quite as kind to me then as it was today. It's a really beautiful day today, so thank you for ordering that. So whenever we do question times as EG, of course, we all always have a little look at what's been going on in the city so we can talk about it. And this time, instead of me looking through what any of the property press had been writing about Glasgow, I thought I'd turn to The Guardian, which may have been a mistake, but I'm going to try it. So it might be mildly controversial, but bear with me. So this is what I learned today. If you live in Glasgow, you're more likely to die young. Apparently, men, quite a few of you in here, die a full 7 years earlier than your counterparts in other cities. 7 years! And now it has been said that the reason for that, and I am guessing that this was English people saying this, that was because of the fried Mars bars. But we all know that that's crap. The truth, actually, though, is more sad than that. So studies have shown that Glaswegians are dying earlier because of despair and because of high levels of poverty. So really, really sad. And you might be thinking, well, why does this matter in a property debate? And it matters because it's based on a theory that planning decisions made back in the 1950s and onwards have made both the physical and mental health of Glasgow's population more vulnerable to despair, to poverty. But that is changing. And I also read today that the city's about to go its first rooftop running track, which there's a few of those in London. I've never met anyone who's used one, but they're nice to have. a rainy running track, we love it. Anyway, tonight, so we'll undoubtedly talk about Brexit, we'll talk about the general election, we'll talk about the Indy Ref, we'll talk about the circus, by which I mean politics in general, and we'll talk about Glasgow and how its people, real estate has a role to play in creating a great city for them. We'll talk about its plans to achieve its great ambitions, how it's going to attract talent and hang on to the bright minds that study here already. Although I like to talk, as you've guessed, tonight is about you asking the questions, so I will be asking a few of you, and I have your names, to stand up and share your question with the audience. But I'd also love for anyone here to ask questions. We have Slido. I believe there will be a slide showing you how to use it. There we go. Go to slido.com and use the hashtag EGQT. You can ask your questions on there if you're a bit nervous. If you like the traditional way of putting up a hand, that is fine too. It's quite nice. And we'll come around and give you a mic and just stand up and ask your question. But before we get into all of that, we of course have to meet our panellists. So starting closest to me is Rick de Blaby, who is CEO of Get Living. Next to Nick, Nicola Cameron, who's Director of Property Development and Investment at the University of Glasgow. Next to Nicola, Barry, I'm going to get it wrong, aren't I? McGowan, wrong. Partner at Shoes, I tried three times. You can call me McClary if you like, back. And last but not least, Bruce Patrick, who's the director at Savills. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. So because I'm mic'd up and someone has to start with a question, I'm going to go first and ask that question that I posed a little bit earlier on about the Glasgow real estate environment and what that can do for people and what role it has to play in creating a better place to live and maybe, you know, reducing that 7 years to zero. I'm going to start with you, Bruce, because you're furthest away from me.
So the question is, what can Glasgow do? What can real estate do?
What can real estate do?
So I think our view of what real estate can do is, if you look at Glasgow now and what is happening in Glasgow now and the potential for what Glasgow could become over the next 3, 5, 7, 10 years, is it's got the potential to completely transform in a way that I don't think Glasgow has done since the Industrial Revolution. Our view is that its supply of brownfield sites close to cultural quarters, close to the knowledge institutions, have the change, whether you're in Partick, Finiston, Southside, City Centre, East End, Candlewriggs, to create new mixed-use quarters across the city. And I think as part of that, there's an ever-increasing focus on sustainability, zero carbon, transport, connectivity, green issues, health and well-being increasingly coming in. And I think health and well-being is not just about how you work in an office anymore. It's about your whole life. And so the way that we are so enthused about what Glasgow could be, and you know, I've seen questions about, you know, where is Glasgow right now? And our view is that it is in the midst of a resurgent period, which could lead just to complete transformation of the city. And I think our one wish for the city is just carry on Glasgow, because you know, you could go somewhere where, if you'd looked at the city 10 or 15 years ago, most people would just have said, you're never going to get there. So it's really exciting.
Fantastic. And Barry, you've just moved here. You've just created a big hub here in Glasgow. What's drawn you to the city?
I think it's that sort of rebirth, because I think that's a bit dramatic, but I think over the last sort of 20, 25 years, I thought the city had thrown off that sort of no mean city sort of mantle that it had. And it's taken a long time, I think, for the developments that have come through that to, I suppose, develop into something which is more than just filling space and maximising a return, by actually looking at the placemaking that comes with each of them. And I think a big feature in all of the current schemes that are coming along is a focus on public realm, a focus on the added benefits from living and working, the running tracks on roofs, the public spaces that you get within developments, and the connectivity with the surrounding space, so that when you're coming to work in the morning, you're actually walking through an environment that you want to be in to get to your destination, and actually you're quite happy to live and work there. So there's facilities, there's leisure opportunities, and I think that where Glasgow could thrive is on the basis of that connectivity, so that we're actually creating places to live, work and play to a certain extent as well, and not just boxes to drive to in the morning and leave at night.
Fantastic, thank you. Nicola, obviously the university has a huge role to play in that.
Yeah, I mean, we always had an understanding that we would get this amazing 16-acre site back at the edge of our campus. And so we did a lot of research. And what we came to realise very quickly was that universities had an incredibly important role in the regeneration of a city. And, you know, we saw that all around the world. We saw it in New York, Detroit, Maryland, Pennsylvania. And we spent a lot of time understanding what had worked in other cities and, you know, taking real lessons learned. And I think that, to your point, we didn't just think about building new academic buildings. We thought about building a new urban quarter. And so we've put public realm in, and we've engaged with the wider city, so that actually what we're doing is all to the power of Glasgow. And it's all about attracting the best and the brightest talent, and, you know, engaging them and retaining them, and, you know, hoping that they stay here forevermore and make Glasgow, you know, their choice, and being really, really sort of powerful economic contributors for our city. So I think that universities have an incredibly important role, and I'm one university. There are others, and they are very, you know, other universities are available. But when we look around the city, everybody has this sort of same positivity and is really thinking about how universities can be part of the story now and part of the solution.
Fantastic. And clearly a way that we retain talent is by providing affordable, nice housing. Rick, that's your role. What's Get Living doing to create a Glasgow, a place where people can stay and afford to stay and enjoy staying?
Sure. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for having me. I mean, just on your first point, Sam. I mean, that point about, you know, health. When it's not my day job at Get Living, I actually sit on a housing association board, and I absolutely see that correlation between the quality of housing and the health and well-being of people. And, you know, every city has its troubled areas, and housing associations are on the front line of that. And you know, the housing association often talks about homes which are safe and healthy and warm. I mean, the very basic things that a lot of us take for granted, but there is a real correlation between, you know, all of that and one's health, life expectancy and so on. But to answer your question, what are we trying to do in our bit? I mean, we've got a big site down towards the High Street. For those who don't know, we bought 7.5 acres just behind the Unite buildings by the High Street station. And we've got a consent to build 727 homes, which we'd want to rent. And our homes are absolutely aimed at that mid-market. So we very much look at the average income of people living in Glasgow and try and disrupt that sector that people are familiar with when they're in rental accommodation, about insecurity of tenure and the rents going up and big fees and security deposits and all that stuff. So we give people a 3-year lease from the get-go, rents go up at CPI on each anniversary, no fees, no security deposit if you pass the referencing, and you can decorate it as you like, you can have a pet, and all of the things that we say we're trying to disrupt that sector. And you know, we talk about not just a great home, but it's a great home in a great realm, which is safe, vibrant, addresses a lot of the well-being things that you're talking about. Backed up, we hope, by exemplary service, just taking the stress out of life. And if that, you know, addresses some of the housing shortages, if it gives people a better option at a price they can afford, then we're doing our tiny little bit, I guess, to address those problems. And I think our team, you know, come to work with a real sense of purpose around that. But I don't underestimate, you know, the challenges that are out there. And you know, they're prominent in Glasgow. I've got to tell you, they're really acute in London. Mm. They're pretty acute in Birmingham and a lot of other major cities.
So sticking with challenges, I'm going to ask Marie to ask her question. We do have a microphone. Maria's just here. Have you got it? I can run over to you with it. I'm going to be really awful and make you stand up. I apologise.
Does the panel feel that there is adequate focus and support in place from the local authorities with City Deal ongoing to deliver them successfully? And is it deemed to be value for money projects? Choices? I went on to say, or just comment, City Deal seemed to be set up in a very short time. We know it's a long-term commitment. But not appearing to allow appropriate resource and planning time at that stage. So I think that's open to all the panels.
So are you getting support? Are the local authorities getting support? Who wants to start us off?
I'll start off. So I think that there is absolutely no doubt that Glasgow City Council have got the bit between their teeth. And, you know, you can look at their River Clyde 2050, you can look at the strategic development plans just come out for the city centre, you can look at, they're now just about to start the Town Head and Learning Quarter draft regen work, the Centenach one is out and published. So I think the Glasgow City Council needs to be commended, I think, heartily commended for its efforts in preparing Glasgow for the next generation of investment. I think it really gets how the city needs to change. I think the issue, though, beyond that, is there's no doubt that Glasgow is attracting some serious waves of investment that, again, 10 years ago would have been somebody who said, you're off your rocker, if you'd said Barclays would come here, JP Morgan would come here, Morgan Stanley would come here, that, you know, PRS would be happening, the unis would be spending £1 billion each or whatever else. But I think the issue is that the private sector, the money is there, but I think for every two or three people who are going, we're here, we want to spend, we've looked at Edinburgh, we'd rather be in Glasgow, equally there are other parties who are getting frustrated by, once you go beyond the planning, the frameworks and the sort of the foresight and the advice, the actual practical everyday dirge of getting a consent, getting building warrant, getting all that piece in place is just massively frustrating. It's taking too long. People are getting hacked off. And that is the worry for Glasgow, is having set it up, that we can't convert it. And that would be my main concern.
Barry, you're nodding along there.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that if you're involved in development at all across the country, I think the frustration is always when it gets down to the individuals in particular departments and local authorities who are overworked and underpaid and stressed and really don't have the time or the resource to do the job. And that's where the blockage appears and the frustration in the systems appear. I think at a political level, at local member level and councillor level, there's a desire to do it. And I think that Glasgow City have certainly gone at it in a proactive way and look forward in terms of what they're planning for the city. But when it gets down to individual developments, there is still a blockage when it gets to planning applications and building warrants, which causes a frustration to developers and investors. But that's about a different sort of investment in the infrastructure within the local authorities.
Mm. Rick, are you frustrated?
Yeah, I'd agree with both of that. I mean, when we've dealt with Susan Aitken, Anne-Marie O'Donnell, it's been great. I mean, really first class. And even when I've had engagement with the government, Derek Mackay and the like, again, really good. But I think, as Bruce and Barry said, you know, when you get into the nitty-gritty of trying to process your planning application, and even when you get through that and you're trying to get your Section 75 signed, it grinds to a halt. And, you know, I know the council's under pressure with resourcing and so on. I mean, applicants like us would happily pay, actually, to fund that resource because, you know, in our case, we're trying to invest about £200 million in the city. And, you know, the cost of funding some of those offices would be, you know, well worth the trouble in our case. I think the council are a bit sensitive about things like that, and I'd urge them to get over it. Because, you know, if you're trying to execute and fulfil on the promises that you've set up, I'm sure there are mechanisms, controls and processes you can put around that to ensure that people aren't going to accuse us of some kind of favouritism or kind of trying to buy influence. I think we're all in it trying to do the right thing, but that execution thing is really difficult. And I'll just add to that, getting utilities fixed in is just as hard.
Have we got anyone from the council in the room? No, that's a shame, isn't it?
I've talked
to them too. I'm just running out the back, actually.
Bruce, you talked there about the level of attraction there was coming into the city. So, Nicola, I wanted to ask you one of the questions we've got up here, that does Glasgow need to do more to promote itself internationally to sort of widen that attraction?
I think we are better now than we were before. I think compared to other cities, we've still got a long way to go. But we have growing numbers of international students coming to Glasgow, actively choosing Glasgow, you know, and you see that. You only have to walk down Dumbarton Road, you know, on the periphery of our university, and just the feel of the space has changed, and, you know, the tenants that are occupying the units have changed. So I think that we are a very friendly city, and I think we're very welcoming, but we probably need to get out there more and just showcase what we have to offer. But the problem with doing that is you need to have the systems in place to support it. So there's no point in going to the expo in Dubai and saying, you know, Glasgow's open for business, please come to Glasgow and spend, you know, your money here, if all of the other systems aren't ready. So the council aren't ready, if, you know, the building control aren't ready, and it's the same frustration. So yes, I think we need to do more. I think we're on a journey. And I think the council and the sort of economic development people absolutely recognise that. But, you know, you've got to have the sort of the skills to pay the bills when people do eventually come here. So, but we're doing amazing things across the whole of the city, and we should be proud of what we've done. And in the same way, you know, we were a powerhouse in shipbuilding and all of these other things. We are absolutely cutting edge in some of the new technologies, and you know, that's not to be sniffed at, that, you know, our work in nanofabrication and all of these things. We need to be better at showcasing that. Yeah. I think it's quite a Scottish thing, actually, about, oh gosh, you know, I better not tell anyone how good I am, because there'll be somebody ready to tell my mum, or, you know, say,
does your mum not want you to be good?
No, who do you think you are? But, so we have to break free from that, because it's our own, we're limiting ourselves as a city. So I do think we've got so much amazing things happening, and we need to be braver about talking about it.
So how do we do that? What is, you know, it's easy to say we should be better at talking about ourselves, but, you know, if you're not used to it, it's quite difficult. So what are the steps that, you know, people are doing wonderful things in this city, in this country, what are the steps they should take to show off a little bit? Rick, I don't know why I came to you, but it felt right.
Look, Glasgow's proposition is pretty stellar. I mean, I get to see quite a lot of cities around the UK, and they're all after trying to find that magic proposition that attracts the inward investment, the international investment, all the rest of it. I mean, everyone cites Manchester as the great example, and you know, that had a champion in Howard Bernstein. And I think quite often when cities are really trying to punch and get clear water between their peer group, it helps to have a very prominent champion. Birmingham had the same one. Leeds, actually, you know, I was doing quite a lot of development in Leeds, whatever it was, 10 or so years ago, and its proposition was struggling a bit, and they got someone in who really spent probably the thick end of 2 years really listening to all the stakeholders and everyone in it. And, you know, she became a champion of the thing, and actually, if you go to Leeds now, the way they articulate their proposition is really strong. I mean, look, we've invested in Glasgow, so we bought the story. But I think it has got a strong proposition. Maybe you're right, the projection of it to the channels that you need to speak to just needs that champion. And again, it goes back to similar to the planning thing. You need a bit of resource to be able to do it. Mm. But it pays handsomely, as Manchester would tell you. It's having the confidence to go out there and do it, I guess.
Mm. Bruce, is it for occupiers to be that champion?
Yes, I mean, I think that Glasgow, I mean, if you look at the accolades that Glasgow's just got in the last week, it got UK City of Culture, phenomenal. We all knew that anyway, to be fair. It's got it's got a World Cup sport thing in 2023, World Cup, World City of Athletics or something like that in 2023. So people know that Glasgow is a fantastic place to come and party, tourism. It's got fantastic natural resources, etc., etc. I think it actually does really, really well. But like everything, it can be fine-tuned to just be that little bit better. I think if you look at the office occupational market, the fact that Barclays chose a site on the south side of the river is just—it's a total game changer for the city centre for all property uses, not just for offices. The fact that's, you know, Morgan Stanley were a little bit behind that, Clydesdale Bank are signing up, JP Morgan are going to come in and put, you know, the guts of 300,000 square feet on our Gow Street. In terms of, these organisations are buying buildings, they're not leasing them, they're putting 100 million quid plus into their real estate. And that, in terms of an international flag in the ground saying, we love Glasgow, we're here, we're really investing in it, is fantastic. And I think if anything, Glasgow shouts about Party City Tourism, SEC Arena, and all that stuff. And actually, it probably could shout more about knowledge and universities, and actually the business, maybe the business community actually needs to really, you know, come forward and promote it more.
Fantastic. I'd like to throw to a audience question here, which which links in with that and is about priorities for the city. So is Julie here? Julie Moulsdale? No? Yes? Hello. It's like the question row, I like it. Julie, please stand.
I'm now desperately trying to remember my question. Oh.
Do you want me to show you?
Yes, please. So I'm Julie Moulsdale from Perceptive Communicators. We're a communications consultancy that specialises in property and construction. And I'm a very proud Glaswegian, as you can probably tell with an accent. So Glasgow is totally transforming. But what do the panel think are the key priorities to ensure maximum economic growth? I agree with all the things you've said. One of the things I think we don't get across is the fact that talent stays in Glasgow, so you have that continuity of talent staying, which I think from an employment investment perspective, we could make much more of that. But what are your ideas? Thank you.
Nicola, do you want to start us off?
Immediately I started to think about we have a really strong widening participation, so we want to open education up to as many people as possible. And I truly believe in that, that I think Glasgow's potential is its people, and the best way to have people be the best that they can be is to support them in their education, because that, you know, that's the root of everything. And so I think if we can genuinely invest in our people and our children and, you know, people coming to our city, I think that that's a really good place to start, because people like JP Morgan and Barclays, they're coming here because there is a talent pool. You know, they are seeing great universities churning out really highly qualified students, but not only highly qualified students that are employable. You know, so it's a given that you go to University Glasgow, mine, you'll get a great degree. But we also work very hard on what those attributes are, about being able to work collaboratively, being able to work in a project-led basis, independently or with teams, you know, all of these things that are actually the soft skills that are very hard to measure that employers want. So I think our people are the starting point, and, you know, if we can provide the best, most wide-ranging education for the most amount of people, then I think that's a really great place to start. And it's definitely an attractor. That's why people, you know, are investing in our city.
Thank you. Barry, key priorities.
I think it gets down to people come for many different reasons, but they stay because of the quality of accommodation that they can live in, the different tenures of accommodation. So you may want to buy a house, you might want to rent, you might want to move around. So I think the spread of tenures, I think, is really important. I think what's happening just now in sort of build to rent, I think, addresses a big issue in that, and a big potential hole for the number of new jobs that are being created. And I think, again, then it ties into the placemaking and a quality environment that people want to live and work in. And if you can tick those boxes, that's the priority that makes people want to stay and also come back. So you get a great economy, you get people wanting to live here and people wanting to visit and boost the tourism side of things as well. So it's about, I think it's about the environment that you create is key, and that should be the priority.
Thank you. Mick, should BTR be a key priority?
Yeah. Look,
what's the price?
I've never run a city or a council, but I've run a few businesses. And I think when you're trying to achieve success, economic growth, if that's the metric, but there are lots of other metrics about success, you've really got to join the dots of just about everything. That businesses function not just on one thing, but because they get everything dialed up. So for sure, you need to attract the jobs and sustain the jobs, and they've got to be durable jobs. You know, you've got to get the education piece right. Glasgow's doing pretty well on that. Certainly the homes, and, you know, we're doing our bit longer than everybody else to do that. There's a whole thing about infrastructure, which you've got to get right. There's a big thing about leisure, so, you know, getting that sorted. The whole arts, culture piece, and again, you're really strong on that. Health, that whole thing around civic life. You know, there's a thing around religion and diversity and getting all that stuff, and the public services that go with it. And I think it goes back to what we were saying a minute ago. You need a champion who understands how to project a proposition and can enable or convene and get all of those things right. I was at a gig the other week. Andy Burnham, the mayor of Manchester. I've got to say, he's really good. I mean, mayors don't actually have that much power when it comes down to it. But I have to take my hat off him. He's a really good convener. He's really good at pulling people together and holding them and getting them all to converse and collaborate. And actually, I think that makes him a pretty good champion for that place. And, you know, maybe, there's an area there to think about.
Use Slido, if you like, to think about who you would like to be the champion for Glasgow and whack it in there, and we can... I'm giving work to my team members, and they can do a poll, and we'll sort it out by the end of this session. Bruce, for you, key priorities.
I would say my number one key priority is the oxygen, in every sense, of finance and private investment. Because it's all very well, the public sector really trying to create this platform and framework and potential for development, but without finance and investors coming in wanting to fund our next generation of residential or commercial or mixed use spaces, this stuff is just going to sit in architects' cabinets for the next 10 years. And I think it's really interesting. If you go back and look at the number of, for example, new house starts in Glasgow City pre-crash between 2004 and 2007, it was roughly 2,500 to 4,000 per annum in terms of new houses delivered by house builders in Glasgow City. And let's face it, most of them were funded by the Scottish banks, the Bank of Scotland, Royal Bank, Clydesdale Bank, etc., etc. Now we're lucky if it's 350 a year. So we've got to, that is purely down to the lack of finance to small indigenous house builders to get building blocks of flats in the city centre. And you can see that all the way through the property classes. It's the same for retail and leisure, it's the same for offices. And the thing I wish for most is a period of bloody stability. where we can have the confidence to attract the next generation of funders, whether they're institutional, banks, debt funds, overseas, high net worths, whatever they may be, get them to Glasgow and get some of this stuff out of the ground. That's my number one.
We've got dangerously close to the B word then.
I did, yes. Sorry.
I was getting nervous. There was a question up there earlier that I thought was really... there were two. Well, there was more than two, but the two that I'm going to pick out was one, someone asking what everyone was doing on the panel. We've talked a lot about attracting people to city, and a question from the audience about what each of you individually was doing to attract and retain talent into Glasgow. I'm going to start with you, Barry.
Well, Shoespiss only opened in Glasgow on the 1st of May, so we've just done 6 months. So we are actively recruiting in the market for top quality young lawyers. I don't see many young lawyers in the room, but if they know any... no, seriously, we're actually... Because of the nature of our business, we are Shoespiss' 13th location. Lucky for some. And our strategy is about going into new locations and trying to pick up the best of the new young talent who are hungry to do law in a different way. And we are actively out there trying to get those people who are go-getters and self-starters and who see law as part of the jigsaw of real estate and want to get out there and engage and learn new skills and have lots of client contact and build a business for themselves. So we're pounding the streets doing it as we speak.
Excellent.
Sending the CVs to me and be confidential.
We will put Barry's email up at the end. Bruce, for Savills, and the question there is actually about property professionals. Apologies, I missed that earlier. And this interesting question below about it's losing its RICS surveying-related courses, I guess there's a bigger debate around there whether you need to be a surveyor these days to work in property. But what is Savills doing to attract people into the sector here in the city?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think properties probably facing a little bit of a crisis in terms of getting young people in. It's got a bit of an identity crisis. It's hard perhaps to get across to people who know nothing about it actually how exciting and how much fun you can have doing it. I think the fact that, you know, places like Paisley and Caledonian, you know, I'm a Paisley Tech boy, even pre it becoming a university, and it was where you went to get a year out, get a degree in 4 years, and you know, I think it's actually desperately sad that, you know, it's now really Edinburgh and Aberdeen. You have to go and do this. So I think it's I think we're facing a real battle for talent. The Savills office in Glasgow was started 20 years ago with roughly 10 people. It's now 110. So it's become, in a property sense, a large organisation. And we try and take on probably 2 or 3 graduates a year, bearing in mind that it's been pretty hard to write a paper to employ new people over the last 5 or 10 years post the crash, as we've had to deal with that. I think increasingly we're actually, you know, our London office goes through a great big milk round, goes out, puts 100 people through it, and gets probably 20 people of roughly the same sort of calibre the other side. We're increasingly trying to sidestep that and actually pick people out much earlier in the process. I think there's very few of them now have actually done a 4-year course. They're all doing conversion courses. And we're finding probably somebody who's really hungry for a job doing that, somebody who has got a more interesting background, wants to convert, wants to learn and work at the same time. So I think, I think property's got to decide what it wants to be. And I think what's also really interesting is people like Barclays and JP Morgan come into the city, actually, for some of our departments, it's losing staff to those sorts of organisations rather than the property organisations that's going to be a real challenge for us. So, you know, there's challenges everywhere, I think.
Thanks. Nicola?
So, on a really small scale, Glasgow do one of the conversion courses, so we do the MSc in real estate, and actually, I'm smiling because one of my colleagues is here, but we have interns, and so we teach on that course because, you know, we're doing it, so we go along and we guest lecture and whatnot, and then we have a lot of discussion. And, you know, each year for the past 5 years, I've had 1 or 2 interns come from that course, and actually I now have 3 of them working in my team. So on a really small scale, we are giving people a pretty wide experience of what property now compared to when I started is very different, and working on a scheme, you know, the like of what we're doing is just the breadth of experience that people get shows them that wow, this is a game changer. This job can allow you to go anywhere and pretty much do anything. And actually I think, again, we need to get better at going out into schools or wherever and saying to people, because, you know, how many careers advisors do you go to? So I went and they said, what do you like? And I said geography, and they said, well, you should be a geography teacher. Nobody said you should go into property. So again, the industry needs to get a wee bit better at explaining what we do, and I'm just, you know, it's the best job ever. So
thank you. Rick?
Well, we have 104 people in London, and I would think I single-handedly take the average age out by 10 years. I mean, we've got a really young crew in London. The question is, what are we doing up here? I mean, unfortunately, until I got a building warrant and a revised planning consent, I'm doing absolutely bugger all, which is driving me mad. You know, we do attract a lot of young people. And actually, in the build-to-rent sector, we don't generally recruit out of real estate, I have to say. You know, it's very much a business around experience and service, so we tend to recruit a lot of our people out of hospitality or retail. Latest, one of our senior guys came out of health clubs. So real estate's not the prime area where we go and recruit. On that RICS thing, You're talking to the wrong guy because I've been shown the yellow card about four times for not doing my CPD. And I'm obviously on parole at the moment.
I think you might get some for this.
No, my sin is I don't record it, okay. Not that I don't do it. And I keep telling them that, but it doesn't matter. I think the RACS, I worry about it. I think it's losing its relevance. I really do. And I think, you know, on real estate courses, they've just got to be much more broad in their outlook. I do a few things for Oxford Brookes. And when you ask, you know, how many of your parents work in real estate, I can tell you most of the hands go up. Mm-hmm. But, you know, kids who are coming out of universities like yours and Leeds and all the other Russell Group ones, you know, the ones that are doing economics or geography or finance, I mean, these are the ones that are sharper and more attractive employee propositions for us. I mean, reciprocally, we have to make sure our employee proposition is good for them. But I think the RACS and the, you know, the world of estate management has got to up its game.
Yeah. I would love to talk for hours about that because I'm quite opinionated, but I'm not allowed to be. What we have, there will be an opinion now. So what we haven't talked about yet is Edinburgh. And there is a question in the audience from... Oh, no, there's not. Martin's not here. But I'll read his question. No, that's not. I've got it wrong. Apologies. It's a question from Barry. Where's Barry from Denton? Hello, Barry. I'm going to make you stand up as well. I apologise.
Hi, yes. Does the panel believe that Glasgow lags behind Edinburgh and other regional cities in terms of attracting... foreign investment from, you know, sovereign wealth funds, etc. And if they do believe that, what can the real estate market do about that?
Thank you. No. Barry?
No.
No.
I don't think it does. I think, again, it gets back to that point of talking it down and not talking it up enough. Mm. I think there's this general perception, and I don't know if it's a Glaswegian thing, of Edinburgh as in some way better, despite all of the surveys and stats putting it the other way around. Glasgow's a bigger metropolitan economic community. It's growing faster, it's attracting more jobs, it's developing faster. I think it's far better. And they can keep what they've got in their castle. So my answer is, I think even just the stats and the inward investment and the jobs that Bruce mentioned earlier in terms of the global, truly global entities that are coming here and what they're investing and the money that brings with it is it ticks the box in terms of saying that Glasgow's miles better. Hmm.
Bruce, do you agree? Is it a perception thing, a self-confidence issue?
Yeah, no, so I've got two views on this. So the reason why Edinburgh gets, perhaps, Edinburgh is the first place for an investor to land who decides to come to Scotland is just because it's a capital city. And if you're choosing Edinburgh over Glasgow and you get it wrong, you're less likely to lose your job because you've invested in the capital city. That's our general view. So I actually asked our investment team for some stats on international investment in the office market in Glasgow. And so last year in 2018, UK institutions had 60% of the market. And then everybody from South Korean to Dubai took up the rest. There's been a remarkable change this year where UK investors are making up 20% of the market. And then leading from the top, South Korea, 30%, France, 15%, Germany, 10%, Holland, 10%, New Zealand, 4%, South Africa, 4%, US, 2.9%. So I think from that, again, if you turn the clock back 5, 6, 7, 8 years, you know, it would have been UK investors would have been much higher proportion. So I think that Glasgow is, again, it's doing really well. Just perhaps this sort of stuff doesn't get out into the market. People don't understand perhaps where all the actual, you know, it's maybe UK investment houses, whether it's Savills Investment Management or Knight Frank Investment Management or CBRE, but actually the pots of money are global. And that's maybe what disguises the fact that it's very international, actually.
Nicola, from a university's perspective, how's that battle?
But I think from a university's perspective, our growth in international students and our prominence and our partnerships with other institutions around the world, the types of research that we're doing and the collaboration with other institutions around the world. It's interesting that the South Korea, because we are approached, you know, by South Korean institutions all the time to send government officials back to Glasgow for training, etc. You know, so I think we are a very international city, and I think we just kind of get on with it. So again, it's that piece where we're doing a lot of it, just not necessarily shouting about it. But our growth in international students is just, you know, year on year is increasing, and we don't really see any end to that, nor do we want to, because it creates diversity in the city, it creates interest, it creates an interesting community of practice and knowledge and experience. And we do see more and more that students and, you know, young career academics and others, what they're looking for is now how they measure their life in a series of experiences. And so Glasgow is absolutely delivering on that concept. And, you know, I think we're a very attractive international city. And we've got a building that looks like Hogwarts. So, you know, you just can't underestimate the importance of the Hogwarts building.
Absolutely, that should be on the sales brochure. Rick, any thoughts from you on Edinburgh versus Glasgow?
Look, the short answer to your question is no. Bruce has got the stats. You asked about sovereign wealth. 22% shareholding in my company is owned by Sovereign Wealth. And we're here, and we're not in Edinburgh. And we've tried Edinburgh, and it's a lot harder. They're not as open for business as Glasgow.
Excellent. We've talked about the cities. I think when we're here, we have to remember that not everything is about what's here in the city. There are other parts of the region. And there's a very good question from Dennis. Is Dennis here? Hi, Dennis, and thank you.
Hi, good evening. Glass in one hand and microphone in the other, so no change there, I guess. I just wonder if the panel feel that there's anything meaningful that can be done to arrest the seemingly inevitable decline in suburban shopping precincts, and this could be Glasgow or anywhere else, I suppose.
Thank you. Bruce?
Yeah, the answer to that is yes, there is, and the answer...
Do you know what?
More often than not, it is you've got to involve residential in some shape or form. And we are doing a lot of repurposing reports at the moment on suburban shopping centres, retail warehouse parks, leisure parks. And it is very difficult in some of these locations to see a continuing commercial, whether it's retail or leisure use, in those schemes of the size that they are. They may just simply be too big for the market, there may be a better competing scheme, there may be too many units in the town, but if you're buying a single level retail warehouse or suburban parade, where you can actually maybe knock it down, right size the number of retail units, so it's not 10 units, it's 3, get the right operators in, but you can build 3 or 4 stories of residential above. And what's amazing there is that the residential is becoming a much more fragmented market as well. So there's mid-market rent, there's social rent, housing associations, private for sale, etc., etc. So we're seeing the residential market is expanding in terms of number of potential operators and crucially the funding streams. And we're doing a lot of work around, you know, repurposing of surface car parks, where if you've got a suburban shopping centre with a large surface car park, which isn't necessarily used all day, then the potential then to build pods or additional units, residential, in those car parks is a real opportunity, because we've got a lack of supply of residential units pretty much across the whole sort of Strathclyde area.
Mm. Rick, do you see BTR having a role to play in those suburban areas?
Yeah, I do. Look, it's a really acute issue. I sit on a BPF regional policy thing, and that is like the number one thing that comes up. But as you say, Bruce, a lot of them are going to be repurposed. And given, you know, we've got a shortage of housing and a surplus of retail, you can see it absolutely going that way. And can it be built to rent? I would have thought it could, because 5 million households rent in the private sector at the moment, and that's due to go up to about 5.75 million in the next four or so years. And again, if you look at the BPF stats, I think built-to-rents built in planning under construction at about 150,000. So it's not even close to the level of demand that we know that's out there. Mm. So it comes back to the will of local people, planning authorities and capital investors and platforms like ours to go and do it. But we're at one of those real seismic change moments.
So we have about 10 minutes left of questions. I've got a few more that I want to get from you, the audience, but I'm just going to pre-warn the panel that the final question that I'm going to get you to ask is that top one. So what is more dangerous for the property industry in Glasgow, a no-deal Brexit or IndyRef2? So just marinate on that for a little bit. A real-life question, not even in my thing. You can, Gary, go ahead.
Real-life question from my Glaswegian that grew up in the Gorbals and very proud of this city. So we've got more satellites in space than anywhere else in, outside of North America. We are one of four areas in the world that are hot places to develop quantum solutions, the quantum economy. Not many places can claim to that. So we're reinventing ourselves very quickly. But so I live in London as well as Scotland, and I noticed in some of the residential developments, some of the higher end ones, they've got the future of work in mind when they're putting them together. So you've got your living area, and you've also got a communal place to go and work and meet your neighbours and spend some time with your fifth day at work, because we're only going to be doing a 4 day week soon, aren't we? Yeah. We're probably going to be working in there reinventing ourselves. Are we ambitious enough in terms of the specification of the buildings that we're putting up in Scotland? You look at Singapore and places like that, these really interconnected, you know, data-driven environments, habitats, real future. Are we just kind of doing the minimum, or have we got a real big ambition and we're building stuff that's like the satellites we're putting in space?
There is a rooftop running track. Barry, do you want to start us off with that? Are we ambitious enough?
I think property generally is never that ambitious beyond the tried and tested. I think we're pushing the boundaries. I think build to rent and the demand now for sustainable development and carbon zero and connectivity and hitting BREEAM excellent in new buildings and things has finally come round. And that's been a long time in the coming to get to that point. I think the living work kind of environment and the sort of co-living sector is still there to come through in terms of how does that feature. So I think looking in the future, you can see that as being something, but I think it's still a long way away yet, because I think we're probably not ambitious enough, but the first few people who do it and fail will be testament to that, I suspect. So it's maybe not quite there yet, in my view.
Nicola, are you being ambitious on your side?
Yes. Yes, we absolutely are. And actually, we have taken the decision to put function over form. So we will still build beautiful buildings, but what we focus on is the activity that it will support internally and the connections and the network and the data capture and the crunching of that data. So I think it's about creating spaces that are adaptable, and because who knows what the future holds. So some of these buildings in Singapore are beautiful, but you know they're going to be incredibly difficult to maintain and they will be very costly. So we've really focused on building things that are adaptable and genuinely will allow the activities in them to evolve in the way that people can come together and face the challenges. So that's how we've positioned our development. We've also spent a lot of money putting the right infrastructure in, because actually that's critical, and that infrastructure piece, because that allows us our adaptability in the future. And we've thought long and hard about how we do that. And we've created spaces for people to come together, foods, coffee. I did a sort of around the world extravaganza to see what other universities were doing, and the one message that I brought back was good coffee. That is what keeps a university running, is really good coffee. And so we've thought about how do you get people out of their offices, how do you get people coming together. You know, the evidence would suggest that the days of the lone genius sitting in a dark room coming up with the answer are past. And it is going to be about people coming together to face into these challenges and collaborate. And so that's what we've focused on in our space, is about creating that environment and that adaptability.
Thanks. Rick, is the coffee good in a get living development?
And I don't drink coffee, I can't tell you.
and is the space that you're developing ambitious? Are you pushing the envelope?
Yeah, look, it's a really good question. You know, when I look at the challenges that we're trying to overcome on the things that we're building, and we generally only build in neighbourhoods of 700 units plus, I mean, there's a whole world of tech and AI which we're really trying to bring into our buildings in lots of ways. I mean, one of the fun things that we have now is a Google Home in some of the apartments. So you can say, Google Home, tell Get Living my tap's dripping. And that triggers an order in the office and we go and fix it. Get Living, where's the nearest supermarket? And it says, at Sainsbury's, one celebration. You know, we load up something like 800 questions and probably it's only 50 that are consistently asked, but there's a lot of tech in there. A lot of AI can tell us when things are wearing out. So there's a whole world of that. The environmental thing is huge. I mean, I think, you know, in our world, if we're not building buildings now, today, that aren't super environmentally sustainable, we've probably got a valuation problem in 5 years' time. So it's a bit, I don't do it anymore, but if you build a BREEAM very good office in the City of London, you're not even in the game, are you? Unless it's excellent or outstanding. So I think there's a thing around that. There's a massive piece around modular housing, off-site construction, and we're doing that now in a pretty big way at the Olympic Park, where it's all made off-site and it just screws together like a box of Meccano. You know, all our kitchens and bathrooms are made off-site, they come as pods, all our MEP cupboards, so there's a lot in that. The fire safety thing is just huge post-Grenfell. So I think even if you go in with things that are just building compliant now, you're going to be out of date in 12 months' time, so you might as well look forward on that. The design thing's really key. As Nicola says, the way we all collaborate, the way we design things. It's quite interesting on our, you know, we're looking at what we're designing next. When I look at Elephant Castle, I reckon about 75% of the ovens have still got the instruction manual in. I mean, you know, do people really want the, you know, homes in the way that we've all thought about them in the past? So, you know, there's massive amounts of change coming through. I mean, it couldn't be more exciting, but trying to anticipate that when it takes you 2 years to get a planning permission and 3 years to build it, you're trying to foresee 5 years ahead is a real challenge. And in the midst of all that, you've got to make it viable. And I tell you, in our sector, that is wafer thin, because, you know, we're in low single-digit yield territory, or it's yield on cost steady state. And, you know, if you look at Glasgow and you look at the appraisal and you say, right, we've got to pitch our rents at a level that people on average incomes in Glasgow, 28 grand or whatever it is, can afford. That's that bit. You know what your gross to net leakage is. Typically high 20s, 30%, so that's your revenue. You know what a cap rate is, so that's pretty easy. I'll tell you, if you can't build a building in Glasgow, in our sector, for much under about 210 quid a foot, building all that tech, all that environmental, all that, you know, great architecture, all that public realm, the figures don't add up. So you have to work incredibly hard to get your design efficient. Every square inch counts, every clever piece of specification. And I don't want to get too into it, but, you know, the specification of the taps matters to us, because we're the ones that repair it. And anything that moves, wardrobe doors, taps, showers, and wears out, it's our bill when we come to fix it. So we tend to spend more than a house builder would, because it's our cost, not the resident's cost. So, you know, jumble all that lot up and try and make it land in a successful way is a challenge, an exciting challenge. A stimulating one, but that's why we need all these educated people.
Bruce, who's driving that ambition, I suppose, from your client base, not individual names, but is it the investor, developer, or is the occupier driving the need for more ambitious space?
I think a lot of it is actually, at the moment, it's driven by the property professionals in Glasgow. And I think, in particular, led by a bunch of extremely brilliant architects, both young and old, who are seeing schemes spring up all over Europe, all over Scandinavia, all over the other UK regions, or the UK cities, sorry, and London, and just looking at Glasgow and going, why isn't there a building of that quality here? And we've really sort of tapped in and been sort of drawn into that sort of energy, and we're getting great feedback from clients going to say to them, look, there's the barcode scheme in Oslo. Why can't we find a site in Glasgow to deliver something of that quality and that sort of cool vibe that these places seem to have? And so I don't think Glasgow's lacked ambition. It's lacked the finance to fuel the ambition in many ways, coming back to that point. I think there's absolutely no doubt that in the next 5 years, you're going to see not just one, but more than a handful of buildings that are going to be absolutely knockout world-class in Glasgow, developed in Candlerigs, in the city centre, in Broomielaw, in Finiston, in the West End. So maybe even more than five. And they are going to be absolute exemplar schemes that can stand up against the quality of anything you see, certainly in a European context. You've got to remember that only just very recently, in the last 12 months, have residential cap value rates in the city centre hit 375, 400 square foot plus to allow a tall building of more than 12 storeys to actually be developed. And actually, everybody's having to dust off their calculators and their drawings and going, do you know what? Actually, the market might support that now, which is really encouraging. But the issue is the planners actually are, in some cases, not ready for that. And you're going to a planner and say, look, we've got 4 acres in the Merchant City, for example. We want to build a 1 million square foot campus there. We want to have 18-storey resi towers as part of the mix. And they're just like, what? You know, so it's about collaboration, Nicola, and everybody needs to get with it. And I think if we can bring the funding and finance in, the investors are there to do it, and then we've got to form teams to get this stuff out. But I'm convinced it's coming. And I think the first office building to deliver that is the Barclays building, is going to set a new benchmark for what people perceive the Scottish market will provide in terms of a corporate office environment. So that'd be really exciting to see that.
And then, of course, you have to show off about it.
Yeah, 100%.
Don't forget that. Yeah. So I've gone over, but I'm going to still finish on that last question, but I'm going to say a single word answer in terms of no deal or IndyRef, and then one sentence as to why. No more than 30 seconds each. I'm going to start with Rick.
They're both really bad. But as an eternal optimist, I think this is becoming a political crisis, not an economic one.
Thank you. Nicola. A no word answer. That's fine too.
Just about that one gracefully. So, well, the only thing I would say is the uncertainty. So that's just let's do it or not do it, but the uncertainty is paralysing, and particularly from a university context, you know, we play on that European stage, we play on a global stage, and uncertainty causes huge amounts of challenges. So just do it or don't do it, but let's get on.
Fantastic. Barry?
I would agree. I think it's the uncertainty, and for that reason, IndyRef 2, because it just drags out even longer.
Thank you. Bruce?
Yeah, I would say IndyRef 2 on the basis that if you think it's this bad coming out of the European Union, with whom we don't have a sort of sovereign or monetary or political relationship, wait till you see how bad it could be trying to unravel ourselves out of the Union, with whom we trade a lot more also.
Excellent. Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much for what's been a really fascinating conversation. I'm sorry we didn't get through all the questions, but we have got drinks afterwards where you can ask questions, you can show off,
You can argue, you can do whatever you like, within reason. But for now, please join me in thanking our panel, Rick, Nicola, Barry, and Andrew.